Hi, everybody. Joseph Amato here with my good friend Anthony Caputo. How are you, sir?
Good. How you doing, Joe?
Very good, thank you. We're back, and we're back with episode 3 of Proportional Response. It's a good episode. There's a little bit that leaves me wanting. I'm not going to lie to you about that. We'll get to that. But I think we got to jump in right away with, do we feel like
hold on,
our
you know
issue
I'm,
from the second
wait,
episode.
Wait, wait, wait,
what?
Wait. I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you off.
Well, you did. So
but I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
Because I think first and foremost, we need to address when the beginning scene, I don't know his name because I still don't know the names, Josh, when Josh walks in, he's getting bombarded and he gets pissed off because he doesn't get a proper good morning or hello. And I feel like
oh,
I feel like you skipped over that when we started this episode, and I feel like we just owe it to the people
I
to
didn't,
say.
I'm not skipping over it. It's a non-starter because you are okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, Anthony, you know how everybody has like their own little idiosyncratic whatevers. Anthony gets very, very upset if you don't say hello to him or say goodbye to him when he either comes in or leaves a room. And I don't mean upset like it annoys him. He gets upset. So now he is putting on this interaction between Josh and Donna. Donna is the assistant, by the way. That's what's happening. When in reality, that's not really what is happening. He doesn't care. It's not a sign of disrespect for Josh. Josh just doesn't want to have to be bombarded with bullshit when he first comes in. And you are making it something completely different, and I don't want to talk about that.
Well, I just want to say, and I'm sure other people want to say too, it would be nice to get a hello and a goodbye when you leave and come into a room.
It's very nice, but yeah,
it's a matter of respect. It's a matter of respect. We all have needs. This is one of my needs.
This is such a strange need. I don't even know what to say about that. I think that I get it. Look, I get it. Say hello, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Fantastic. But I really think that is just like, not really. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. Like, that's such a small thing. I know you think it's so big.
Yeah.
I really don't think it means anything at all.
Well, I got that off my chest.
Yeah, you really did.
You may now proceed.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. What were we talking about? Oh, that's right. The West Wing. Okay, so I don't think... correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think we can answer our debate from the last episode. We were talking about whether or not it was a little post hoc ergo propter hoc, where we felt like the president was just responding to what happened, or if there's something that's more deeply seated. If anything, I feel like maybe I am right because I'm always right.
Do you
right.
ever think that you're not right?
It's very seldom, I have to say. But touche, you prick. But I think that the only reason why I feel that way is because I don't feel like anything was uncovered that could lead you to believe that that there's something else going on. There's only two things that really happened throughout the course of the episode that give you any more depth. You realize that it is personal because the president, first of all, admits it, and then it's said again later by the president or by Leo. And then the other piece of information is when Mandy says in her only scene, says, "We always thought he'd be in his head," in regards to this, when clearly it's the opposite. He's being more visceral. So that's the only, I mean, unless I'm missing something.
See, so this is why I think I'm still right about last time.
Okay, what is it?
Is that I think if we skip all the way to the end, what did calm him down? Joe has to cough. God bless you.
It was a cough.
Well, like, you don't want me to just accept the bless you. I say bless you, you say thank you. That's how it goes.
See, is this now going to be a thing like the hello goodbye?
Yeah, absolutely.
Then I'm not going to say thank you because I didn't ask for it.
Well,
now you're giving me
cough.
Something that
then
I don't,
don't
want.
Don't cough.
That
don't
doesn't
sneeze.
Make any sense.
That's it. You're done.
With
I'm cutting you off with the blessings.
Involuntary actions.
I know. You're cut off. No more blessing for you.
I don't want any blessings.
Well, it doesn't matter what you want. I don't want to give it anymore.
Which is fine. So it works out for everybody.
I don't think it works out.
What are you talking about? I don't want them. You don't want to give them. This is perfect.
But if you ever want one, just know that you're not going to get one now.
This is a tough start. I'm like, this is like, I don't know what's going on right now.
All right, but going
back. I
just
took like the deepest breath. What are we talking about now?
How I think I'm right because There's one thing, if we skip all the way to the end, when the president, what calms him down was when Leo starts talking about, it's what our dads did.
Okay, so, you know, this actually is the thing that I really didn't like about this episode. And I do think the flaw is in the writing here. I don't feel like there's a great turn at the end. Because all the arguments that Leo makes in that room have been made prior. It's not a, you know, his reaction is disproportionate. The president feels like you can't put a value on someone's life. So how can you make a proportional response? You know, all of that, it's the same stuff back and forth. They say the same things. There's nothing that Leo says that's new except for, yes, you're right. That one line about it's what our fathers taught us. I'm not sure why mothers couldn't teach them that as well. But whatever, it's what their fathers taught us. And then that just seems to calm him down with no reverence, nothing else paid to that. It's not a big enough payoff for me. And if I were an actor breaking down that scene, I would be like, well, what else happens? I feel like you have to do a lot more work as the actor in there. I don't think the scene is fleshed out well enough from a writing point of view, personally.
Fair enough, but going back to what we were, the argument post-hoc ergo proper.
Right, act, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Right, I do think that what brings him back down to earth is something that did happen in personally to him in life.
Well, that might clear up his fog, but I still don't. You still don't know why. That might be a touchstone for him, but I don't think his father or what his father taught him is the reason why he was angry. If anything, it's the opposite.
I think what, at least between last episode and this episode, what we're learning is that the president is motivated by very personal things. And
yeah,
what makes him react to certain things and what makes him behave certain ways is rooted in things from his past. It doesn't really... And it might not be justifiable by the situation. Like, he might be disproportionate in a lot of ways, but I think it's explained by his past.
I'm still going to go... That, to me, is too flimsy. Not enough... There's not enough information on that. I will say I don't think you can definitively say either way, and I think it's a great thing to talk about, to discuss with people. But I still think I'm right. I still think that it's not post hoc ergo propter hoc. That it is, you know, reaction to what happened to Morris. I really do think. And if you want to say it's anything with post hoc ergo propter hoc, I think it's something where you're discovering that there is an inability or there is a lack of experience with such circumstances that's playing more of a role than he may have thought were to happen. Does that make sense? What I mean to say by that is that because he's not a military man, Jed Bartlett,
right,
because he's never been in a situation where, you know, they make the joke in the episode before, in post-hoc ergo propter hoc, Morris says, you know, got in a lot of tough scrapes, did you? And he's like, yeah, jokingly, because, you know, governor of New Hampshire, no, they didn't. So the combination of his inexperience militarily with violence, et cetera, coupled with something so personal is causing this overreaction. That might be the only post-hoc ergo propter hoc thing that I can see, that it's not just the death of Morris, but also his amateurish nature in being a commander in chief.
But that's everything. See, right, that you just said it beautifully for me. I think you're arguing for my point right now.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that's the only time where I can see that possibly be playing a role. But let's not forget, the thing that sets off this whole thing is Morris Tolliver being killed. So to me, it's more of the nature of violence, and specifically to Jed Bartlett, it's reactionary. Violence cannot exist in the abstract. Mm. That's what I think is the real thing that's going on. Violence is not... I really don't think... Look, there are isolated incidents. I'm talking about for the majority of people.
Right, right.
Violence is not an abstract. Violence occurs in the heat of the moment, in that someone, you know, you get knocked down, you knock someone down, that kind of a thing. Again, I don't think we're gonna solve it. I think you kind of have to look inside yourself and decide what you think is good. That means all you out there as well.
Look deep inside.
Deep inside, guys. But I think that's it. I don't think there is a definitive answer.
That's all we got right now, at least.
At least on that.
And maybe the next episodes we'll learn more.
Yeah. But the other aspect to this episode, which is, it's great, is the idea of a proportional response. And I think that that is something Morris Tolliver says in the episode before. He says something to the effect of, you have a once in a generation mind, which is just fantastic. But the knock on Sorkin's writing is that all his characters sound the same. And I can understand that from like the layman's point of view. They all speak fast and they're all clever and all this and they're all that. But they're all very distinct people with their own points of view. I mean, I think you can even see that because you latch on to Sam. Like, you don't latch on to anyone else because he has a very distinct point of view. But I think the way in which you can really see that Jed Bartlett is different than anyone else is how he questions the idea of a proportional response in that meeting. No one else stops to think about that.
That whole scene was great.
Over and over and over. Yeah, you like that scene,
I love that scene.
Yeah.
I love that scene. Like, he blew my mind with the whole, what's the virtue of a proportional response?
I think that's where his genius does come in. What makes him special and different.
Yeah. It makes you think, right? Like, it really made me think. I mean, it makes me question the virtue of anything now, but I don't want to get philosophical. But, like, you know, I'm going to be...
You can get philosophical.
I'm
going to
be, like, asking, like, you know, in everyday life now, like, what's the virtue of me doing this? Or what's the virtue of this existing the way it does?
Well,
I
want to take that even a step further. So I'm actually going to get a little bit more philosophical on you, possibly. There's the first scene in which he's talking about the proportional response. And then there's the second one.
Right.
Now, in the second one, that's when he starts with the cardiologist joke. You know, he has that little... The first time when he's meeting with the Joint Chiefs, he kind of loses it and blows up, right? So then he comes in the second time and makes a joke. So maybe you think, oh, okay, he's calmed down. He's gotten it off his chest. Makes the cardiologist joke, asks for a cigarette. You know, what is this plan? We're going to kill civilians, which I want to get to, by the way, because I think there's an interesting distinction to be made. If you're a civilian, you can't be killed. But if you're if you sign up for the military, it's totally okay to kill you, even if you have nothing to do with anything. I think that's a very strange thing. But that aside, then they revert to Pericles, the president, you know, when he's like, okay, they're not going to be able to get bottled water and this and that. This other plan, Pericles won. Describe it to me. They describe it. Fitzwallace does. And then, you know, there's that moment where Fitzwallace says, if you go with the whole idea of destroying basically all of Syria, it's going to look like, you know, you are overreacting. And that you've doled out. Now, up to this point, the president seems pretty reasonable. I mean, even the whole cigarette thing, it's almost like just, all right, the guy's under stress and he just needed a moment to just like whatever, right? And then Fitzwallace says, you will have doled out, what does he say? The $10,000 worth of punishment for a 50-buck crime. And that's the moment that the president just like loses it. And even though he doesn't lose it outwardly, he, you know, gives the go order, throws almost disdainfully, throws the cigarette into the glass with water, gets up, turns around and says, 50-buck crime? I honestly don't know what we're doing here. And that was an interesting moment to me to get to your point about going through my day, because what is the virtue of the proportional response as told by Percy Fitzwallace and Leo? There is no virtuous. It's what there is. It's what you do, right?
Mm.
You could substitute any people in there. You could substitute any person, any people in that room, substitute anyone that was killed, and substitute any country that did it for any other reason. And what the point I think that Jed, that the president is, I keep calling him Jed, like he's my buddy. I'm like, hey there, Jed. I think that the point that the president is making is that we're all just going through the motions. What are we here for? Aren't we here to make changes? Aren't we here to do something more, to leave our own mark? No, we're just all doing what is the quote unquote proportional response, the thing that anyone would do. We're stopgaps. We're people that fill a title for the moment. And we contribute absolutely nothing. It's a 50-buck crime. Someone gets killed and it's a 50-buck crime. What are we doing here? We just do what we're supposed to do. Do you see that? It's like almost, it's like depressing.
Yeah.
If you were in power and someone that you cared about was killed, your joint chiefs would come to you and say, all right, we got to bomb these things that absolutely have nothing to do with anything. They know we're going to bomb them. No one's been there. They're not going to feel any sort of penalty being raised against them. It's just what you do. I'm the president. I should be able to do something. No, no, no. This is what you do. In that moment, I totally feel the president's frustration. And so I did a little anti-Sorkin-y in the beginning, and now I'm going to give Sorkin his credit here. What phenomenal writing there. I mean, that just really cuts me. And for the rest of the episode, I'm on the president's side. I don't know what the virtue of a proportional response is. Right. And to be honest with you, if all you do is proportional response and what everyone has done before, I think that's what they say. It's what we've done. It's what we've always done. I don't know what the virtue is in that. And I don't want to be a part of that. So that's my little philosophy, taking yours a step further. Do you see that? How do you feel about that?
Yeah. I mean, what I'm thinking about right now, let's take it even a step further.
Whoa.
What's the antithesis of that?
Like, what is the antithesis of the proportional response? Disproportional response.
Of a crime. A proportional response to a crime or something done onto you that was wrong. The antithesis is there a virtue in a proportional response to something that's done onto you which is right?
Wait, say that again. I'm sorry.
So like say you weren't expecting something or like a gift from somebody and they surprised you and it really touched your heart. Like, wow, thank you so much for this. So now a proportional response would be, I'm going to give you a gift next time and it's just going to be this back and flow. Is there any virtue in that either? Like, do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm wondering if there's a virtue. You're asking if there's a virtue in a proportional response that is that is met and good.
Right.
Right?
Because even that, I don't think. Because then you kind of fall into this routine of it turns something that has meaning into something that's less meaningful.
Well, here's what I think is interesting about your question is that it actually raises another question, which is proportional responses seem to be penalties or right. things that are done. So like, okay, you do this to me, I do that to you in hopes that my response will prevent you from doing that thing again. Now, the president says in the episode, I actually don't think it is preventing things from happening. If anything, it's encouraging things to happen because these countries know that we're not really going to come out and
right.
and make them pay or whatever. The deeper question is, we are struggling, not the question, or maybe there is a question here, I don't know, but we're struggling to get to the place where we just naturally don't do those things to one another, you know? And can you get there doing proportional responses? It's one thing to live. It's actually like your stupid friggin' hello thing. You want people to say hello and goodbye, right? Because it's a sign of respect. Is there a difference between doing it just to not annoy you or doing it out of genuine respect to you? There is a difference, right?
Absolutely.
So it's like the same thing with the proportional response. Is it good that Syria doesn't attack our transports because they're afraid we're going to attack them? Is that just as good, better, worse than them not doing it because they realize that they shouldn't do it?
Right. No. Yeah.
Right? So that's an even deeper question, and I don't know.
Right. But so wait. Yeah. Let's go back to my yeah.
That's, well, that's you're I'm right. trying to answer your question, because I don't know.
Because I want to put the positive spin on this too, right? Because like you said, a lot of the times a proportional response is seen as retaliation or retribution for something that's done.
Right.
Right? But let's say, how about a proportional response being used as a positive to enable better behavior? Or
yeah, so like positive rewarding. They do that in dog training all the time.
Right.
And that does work.
So a proportional response for a dog successfully sitting is giving a snack.
Or a treat.
But what if you, I mean, this is a silly example, but now what if the next time the dog sits, the proportion, you know, instead of giving him a treat, you give him a steak, you know, I don't know.
Well, that's the disproportional response.
Right. So is there virtue in a positive proportional response?
Well, yes, there is, because it works with the dog.
Right. So
there's not a virtue in a disproportionate positive response.
Well, no.
The stake is the disproportionate response.
All right, but let's bring it back. Is there virtue in a positive proportional response?
Yes, I just said there
is. And is there virtue in a negative proportional response?
Now you're talking about a snap on the leash. Now, right. That depends on people. In dog training world, people don't think there is.
Hmm.
It depends on who you go to. My dog trainers don't believe that there's a positive in that.
And so now even escalating to a different level now in terms of nations, right? If Syria bombs our airplanes with the black doctor,
right,
and they die, we're gonna bomb four different bases of theirs, and that's proportional. There's no virtue in that. But is there a virtue in the positive proportional response if we give a gift or do a favor for a nation that they do it back for us?
I don't know. I doubt it, because those relationships are far too complicated than a dog sitting.
Right. So, yeah, and so is everyday relationships too. Yeah. So I'm just curious now if there is a difference, or if there is even any virtue to enabling behavior.
Again, I think when you get to the size of countries, that's not how it works.
Hmm.
I think that's far too complicated. I don't think you can be like, hey, Japan, here's a nice set of dictionaries. Like, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, that's great. We're going to still continue to do this because it's in the best interest of our nation to do X, Y, and Z, even though you don't want us to do
it. But maybe the best interest of nations is collaborating in a different way. You know,
Now you're talking about where we can evolve. Now you're talking about my question, which is, hopefully we get to the place where we realize that there's a better way to do things,
right,
as opposed to having to either bribe someone, which is your positive, or commit sanctions or something, which is a negative. Mm. So now you're talking about my question, which is you hope you get to that place, but we're certainly not there yet. And the bigger and the more people that are involved, which is a nation versus like talking about a dog, it gets far more complicated and messy, and it's harder to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's another word that I don't want to fall into when I don't want people to fall into this trap when thinking about what we're talking about. It's begins with an R. I can't think of it right now.
Reciprocity.
Yeah.
Booyah, not reciprocity.
Reciprocity. And I don't know if is there virtue in reciprocity?
There is, but again, you're dancing around the same issue. You're saying the exact same thing 10 different ways. When you're talking about individuals, one-to-one, it's different when you're talking about a nation. Nations are too complicated. You know what I mean? Hmm. It's too big.
I don't know if there is a difference.
There is a huge difference. You can't say there is a huge difference.
Hmm.
That's why there's mob mentality versus an individual's mentality. When you get too big, when there's so many more people, so many more interests, when information isn't as readily available, this is actually a great segue into perception versus reality, because that's a big thing in this episode, perception versus reality, cosmetic problems versus non-cosmetic problems. The biggest issue...
Well, that's what the lieutenant said.
Yes, but the same thing. Not the lieutenant.
Admiral?
Joint Chiefs.
Joint Chiefs.
The point is that I was thinking about this entire episode, about the difference between perception versus reality, what it looks like and what it is. And I'm on Sam's side for the most part. You know, I'm more concerned about what it is than
with
what
Laurie.
It looks like. Right. And CJ.
Yeah.
But it's the conversation of what it looks like versus what
right,
it is.
Right.
But
right,
here's
right.
the thing, right? When someone is at a place where you don't know them personally and they're removed from you 10 times over, it's harder to know what it is. It's much easier to know what it looks like. And the reason why I bring this up is because we're talking about when things get bigger, things get more complicated. Nations, it's much more complicated. So it's harder to know the truth. Like, do you know Barack Obama personally?
No.
Okay. Do you trust him?
I have to.
But you don't know if you do. Do you know if you like him personally?
No.
Do you know anything about him personally?
Yeah.
Do you know? Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know you knew that. I know nothing about him personally.
Yes, you do.
No, I mean really personally. I know what people tell me. I'm talking about I've seen him in a circumstance and I've talked with him and I saw how he reacted.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I think President Barack Obama is a little different than other presidents. But yes, I see where you're going with this.
My point is that if you hear a story about him that's less than savory, it gives you some pause.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know if I should trust that. But if you heard some, you know, distrustful, if you heard some story about someone that you knew, you would be like, that's absolutely not true. That's a misunderstanding. Because right. You know. So now we're talking. So that's why it gets complicated, I think, when you're talking about nations and bigger things. Now, when you're talking about good old Sam and Lori, that's why it's hard for CJ. Because she might trust Sam, which she absolutely does, but it doesn't matter. She's right. It doesn't matter on hard copy. It doesn't. I'm with her on this in that regard. I can't fall. Honestly, I can't fall out of them. I'm with them both. So, I see both sides of the argument.
Yeah. I'm still on Sam's side.
I know you are. You're such a simp in that regard. You love good old Sam. Have you been with a call girl? I feel like you like this too much, this storyline.
No, I've never been with a call girl.
Like you took her into the office and was like, hey, this is my... Wait, what did we learn about you in the last episode? That all you have to do is be under stress. And that, like, it was a stressful day. And be like, yeah, I got to go meet my call girl later. What? Don't worry about it. I feel like that might be the case. But proportional response is the theme of this episode, right?
Right.
Do you feel like CJ's response to Sam was proportional and his to her?
I think they gave each other proportional responses, yeah.
Really? I disagree. I think that CJ's response was proportional. I think Sam's was not proportional. He made it personal.
How? Say more about that.
Well, do you remember? You remember
the scene? I remember the whole interaction.
Okay. Yeah. So she's talking about what it means for the White House. She's talking about what he's supposed to do, all this and that. She never makes it about him personally. He makes it about her. He says that she doesn't have the strength or the guts or the courage. He makes it about her and losing, what is it, a forfeit to the character cops?
I see that as, yeah, maybe. But I see that
as see that just, proportional?
No, I see it as just a role difference. Like CJ's role and her job is to defend the White House and its people and make sure the perceptions are held up. Sam, she attacks Sam in a way on a personal level, and that's
see,
how he
I
felt
don't
it.
Think I don't think she does attack a personal
level. I just think it's a role difference. Like she's coming
right,
to
but
Sam.
But you just said that she attacked him on a personal level. But she doesn't attack him on a personal level.
But she came to Sam because of something he did in his personal life.
Right.
Right? Because of her role
in
the White House.
But that's not fair. But he knows that that's fair game. It's different if she says, you are doing something immoral.
I don't think that Sam knows that it's fair
game. And the problem is with you. He absolutely knows it's fair game. He just doesn't want it to be.
No, I don't know. Because he seems pretty bent out of shape about it.
He seems bent out of shape being judged on it. He thinks he's being judged on it, and he's not. But he says, quite simply, that she has character flaws in this regard. And that's where the problem is.
Well, I think that's testament to how people perceive things when they think they're being attacked. I think that was just a proportional response to feeling like he was being attacked.
He absolutely felt like he was. I agree that he felt like he was being attacked.
I think that was just a defense mechanism. So,
which is fine, but I think he crossed the line.
Maybe.
And I have to say this, and this is not off topic sort of. I don't think it's sexist or whatever. I don't know what it is. I really hated the choice that they went with for CJ to kind of get like emotional after he gives her. Can you imagine if like Toby or Leo or any of the men were in that circumstance? Would they have broken down like that?
I can't see that happening.
And I just think that CJ is so much stronger than that. And I feel like maybe it was written that way. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was directed that way. Maybe that was Allison Janney's instincts to do that. Maybe that was her choice. I just hated the way that they did that. I love that whole scene. I agree with both of them. I, from a very natural place, I feel like Sam, you know, crossed the line and made it personal. I don't have any problem with him doing it necessarily because I understand that he feels under attack. I just hated the way that scene ended.
I feel like Sam acted virtuously.
I know you do. I absolutely know you do. But I think that if you were CJ in that circumstance, I don't think you would think
that. No, I would have acted just like CJ did.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I don't fault either of them for going the way that they're going.
So let me ask you another question.
Shoot,
then.
Buddy. I'm just stretching my legs.
I'm just stretching my legs here. Do you think that a proportional response can be subjective?
Yes, everything is subjective. Well, except immutable facts. Immutable, like gravity. Gravity's not subjective. And then you're going to be like, well, on Mars it is.
Actually.
No, I think all of that is subjective.
Because now, aren't there certain like military like documents, like standards of what a proportional response is?
Yes.
And that's objectivity?
Right, until someone rewrites a book.
Yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying?
Fair enough.
Like, that's all, like, you know, it's like, oh, something is torture until it's not.
So,
something is proportional until it's not. You know?
Right. So then now
what?
I'm going to use what you just said against you.
Sweet.
In saying that if proportional responses are subjective to the person giving them.
Yes.
Then I think Sam and CJ's responses were both proportional.
I understand
because
that. I'm saying from my point of view, I think he crossed the line. I understand how you can say, I can justify his behavior. I can totally say, Sam was feeling attacked. He even said it. He said he got really flustered.
Yeah.
Said, I'm resenting the hell out of this conversation. She says one other thing and he's like, can I leave now? Like, he's clearly getting upset. And
right,
I know
right.
why he's getting upset. But she's right. He held out on her. He knew something was up. That's why he went to other people in secret. Okay? So she's right. Let's not pretend like he didn't think he was into something that he shouldn't have been into.
Right.
So I understand that he's resentful, but it's kind of a bed that he made for himself.
Right.
And I totally agree he's being held to a lower standard, not a higher one. And I totally agree that we live in a society where adults are not given all the things that he says. Adults are not given the benefit of the doubt, all those things. But let's not pretend like he's not blameless here. And let's also not pretend like he's the one that does explicitly make it personal and she doesn't.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So I mean, that's all I'm saying. You can feel like he was proportional, but I just feel like
from there, if I was in that room, if I was a fly on the wall,
yeah. What was that? Go ahead.
Yeah, they would be proportional. But if we're going to break it down and analyze
it. Yes, you've got me. Yeah. Finish. If you were a fly on the wall, what? You'd be eating what? What? What would you be doing? Would you be reading something? All right.
Pivot.
Well, no, there's another proportional response as well, which it's a comedic one. It's Toby's. With Bertram Coles.
With the who and the what?
Bertram Coles. He's the guy, he's the Democrat that makes the statement that the people in his district are so patriotic that if the president comes there, they'll kill him.
Right.
And so Toby wants to give him the old smack-a-doodle, and so he accidentally leaks it to the press that the Secret Service is investigating him. That's a disproportionate response, but that might actually work. So I just wanted to throw, again, this is another way in which Sorkin, like, he does things in threes, which is like, that's actually like,
that's a thing.
I was just going to say, that's actually kind of a rule. Things just work in threes. That's one of those immutable facts.
Is it, or is it just confirmation bias?
No, it is. Things work in threes.
Based on what?
It's just math. I don't know. No, it is. I'm not even kidding. I'm telling you. Things work in threes. If you do a joke three times, the third time is the peak. The fourth time is the worst.
No, I agree with you.
I'm just questioning where it comes from. It's just from practice, from using it.
Three is my favorite number. Three and eight.
Why eight?
It's infinite. Continuity.
Oh, God.
Continuity.
Oh, so you know what's actually interesting about this episode, too? We are introduced to three new characters.
Right.
Good old Percy right. Fitz.
Kurtz.
Charlie Young and Potato Face. Danny Kincannon.
The
reporter. We got two black guys.
Ooh.
Hey, a little diversitation. What about that? So I love love Percy Fitzwallis. How do you feel? I love John Amos as an actor. I can't wait to get to the episode. There's an episode. It's my favorite scene in all West Wing, and he's in it. And I think it's in season 3 or 4. I don't remember. I can't wait to get to it. I'm so excited. I can't wait to show it to you. But I really like that these two guys add to the conversation of perception versus reality. With the whole, I don't have time for the cosmetic problems. I have, honest to God, battles to fight. I mean, aside from what we've already discussed, did you have any... I mean, about Sam and CJ and how they went back and forth. How do you feel about that whole perception versus reality battle?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, that's... Weren't we kind of talking about that?
Well, we were talking about, like, whether or not they were proportional and this and that.
Right.
I just mean, like... For me, I totally understand how, you know, perception is a big thing. Because you can't know everything. It's impossible. That said, I am more of a doing and less than a perception guy. But in this day and age, it might be more perception. What with Snapchat and
Absolutely.
Facebook.
Yeah, let's talk about social media.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, social media has changed it to a place where perception seems to be more important than the actual content. Does that not make sense?
No, well, it makes sense. I'm just chewing on your statement.
All right. Well, I mean, you said you want to talk about social media. Do you have any opinions on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that perception is more important than reality. Okay. Because sometimes when it comes down to it, if you're right, you're right. You know, if you're wrong, you're just wrong.
Right.
But I do feel like social media blurs the lines between right and wrong.
I think they're doing more than blurring the lines. I think they're feeding into the idea of perception being more important. I see so many times articles, titles of posts, all this and that, with the following. X person eviscerates Y person. X person crushes Y person's argument. X person destroys Y person's blah, blah, blah. Now, we live in an era of clickbait where the title of the thing has to be as catchy as humanly possible, right? So that you click on it. So everybody is eviscerating everyone else. Everybody's crushing. Next time, I want you to, like, next time, just go on Facebook and see all those posts where someone says something about someone else. Bernie Sanders eviscerates Donald Trump. Donald Trump crushes Ted Cruz. It's all these extreme words. Eviscerate, crush, destroys, kills. And it leads me to wonder two things. One, is nuance gone? Is there no such thing as nuance? And two, do those headlines perpetuate a false narrative of not only perpetuate a false narrative, but make us feel like that's what arguments are? That unless you can destroy or eviscerate someone, then there's no argument to be had.
Hmm.
And I feel like that's a perception thing that's not a real thing. And I think it's feeding. I don't know.
Or but even taking it out of the political, like I feel like
It doesn't have to be political. Yeah.
Right. Like I'm a victim of the, not a victim, but I'm a. A product of social media being personifying perception as more important than reality. Because I patrol my social media pages like the Gestapo.
In what way?
Like if somebody remotely posts something that's even slightly I don't agree with and it's associated with my name, I take it down.
Why?
Just because I do think that there is an importance to perception.
Wow, so you are actually more... So that whole thing with like perception is not as important as reality, you are the exact opposite of what that just said because you are so hypersensitive to it that you'll take it down even if you remotely disagree.
I think I'm more on the lines of the Admiral, Percy Fitzwallis.
But you're not because I am worried about the cosmetic problem.
No, I'm not, and I'll tell you why. Because I have bigger battles to battle and perception starts... these cosmetic battles that I do not want to deal with. So, but the more I can get rid of these stupid perception battles, the more time I have to face these big things that I'm legitimately facing.
So then you're saying that you have to nip the cosmetic battles in the bud so that you can fight the real ones.
Right. Because, I mean, when it comes down to it, I wouldn't do something, well, I don't say 100%, but I wouldn't do something that I don't completely agree with. Right? If I don't think it's right, I'm not going to blatantly commit a false action.
But I guess here's my question. Let's find a little bit of a middle ground here. Do you think there's any virtue? Do you think there's any virtue in having an argument, being a part of an argument, you know, on social media, whatever, where it's a little bit more nuanced, even if it's a little incendiary?
You see, I love that. I mean, that's why I love talking to you and about this stuff for the podcast. But I think, I don't know. Like, if I'm going to engage in something like that, I have to give it my all. Because okay, I have to document, especially if it's going to be documented on social media, on the web, in print.
Right.
I have to make sure that what I put out there is exactly the way I perceived it to be.
Right, right.
Because I don't want to leave myself open for other attacks and then have to explain myself 20,000 times over.
That's actually a good point that you make, that you have to give it like your all. And the other problem with my question to you is that Facebook and all these Twitter and all these other forms of social media aren't designed for nuance.
No.
So you can't have nuanced discussion. You're either, a libtard or a fascist Republican. Like those are the names that are like thrown around and this and that. And there's no way that you can be somewhere in the middle. Like you either love Donald Trump or hate Donald Trump. You either love Hillary Clinton or hate Hillary Clinton.
It's so Machiavellian.
It really is. You are either pro-choice or pro-life. And God forbid if you say, I'm not really sure. Like, and that's the problem. That's where I get worried with. I feel like perception really has dominated. I think the perception war is really important, but I worry that I'm like Bartlett in that Situation Room where I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. I don't know what we're doing here because all we're doing is feeding the beast.
Right, right. Yeah.
So it might behoove us to be more like Sam. Fuck, you're right. Sam's right. Damn it.
But I think, too, it's like if somebody gets away, sometimes it slips through the cracks. Like, someone will get something on Facebook that has me associated with it, and I can't catch everything.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, I have disproportional responses to them. Because I feel like they know how I feel.
What are people attaching you to on Facebook? What is going on this thing? Is it like every 5 seconds to turn around like, oh, another one of my KKK friends just posted me in a thing? Like, what's going on with you? What's happening?
I got a lot of people that know a lot of things about me.
Which is, what? Yeah, but I'm saying like, I'm going to be trolling your Facebook every day now because like I have to see what goes up there and what happens.
No, but like, but people get the hints once they do it and they get away with it once. I turn into Al Capone. I'm like, I want him dead. I want his house burned to the ground. I want his wife dead. I want his kids dead. Like,
so what do you think the virtue in that is? He'll never do it again.
I'll never do it again.
I don't understand. I really...
And you know what? And when it comes to Facebook, you could ask anyone. I piss my friends off so much because they're like, it's like we're not even friends with you. It's like, I can't put anything on Facebook. And I totally live, I personify the $50 crime for a $10,000 slap on the
what
wrist.
What are you doing on Facebook? What are you doing in life that people are attaching you to? I want one concrete thing that you disassociated yourself from. I'm not letting you off the hook. What was the most recent?
That you cheat on Words with Friends.
What?
Go on.
I didn't post that on Facebook.
No,
I'm saying, what did someone like attach you on Facebook where you were like, no, this has to go?
Oh, it was a picture from one of my good buddies. Well, yeah, I'll say I'm a good buddy.
Okay.
He's one of my, yeah, he's like my brother.
Okay. he's a good buddy. He's I would say he's a friend. It's my dad. And we, my brother.
Because I don't have a brother, and he's like a very, right, very close male companion.
That was amazing. No, I know her. No, I've hung out with her a few times. Yeah, no, yeah, she's my mom. But
So he tagged me in a picture on Facebook that I didn't, that was undesirable.
Why? What made it undesirable?
Just, I don't know, the lighting wasn't great.
You didn't look good in it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, this has nothing to do with anything other than your vanity. Holy shit. I can't. I gotta walk away.
This is just one example. You said the most recent.
Yeah,
this was the most recent.
One with substance. That
this
is
the
awful.
Most recent.
Oh my God.
Not only that, we were out. It was like a Saturday night and we were in like a bar, and I don't like.
Yeah, make it worse. Make it much worse, because right now this doesn't sound that bad. Make it like there were guns there and drugs and bring the KKK in. Do something, because right now this just sounds like you're a vain little bastard.
No, but so I made him take it down, and I gave him a very disproportional response to that.
All right. I have nothing for you on that. I really don't. Perception versus reality is a tough thing. I can't really... It's hard. We're getting more and more into a perception-based society, and I don't know how to navigate it.
Evidence to that proposition is, even in hiring processes, companies, they'll look at your social media pages before they make a decision. They'll look at your Facebook. And how do you feel about that? People getting hired based on what they post on Facebook.
Well, you know how I feel about that. You know how I feel about the First Amendment. I feel like you should be allowed to say and do whatever you want, and I think you should be allowed to say whatever you want. I don't agree with everything that should be said, but living in a society such as this, sometimes things are said that are uncomfortable, and you have to allow that freedom. And that also extends to your Facebook. Look, if you're a racist or if you're a misogynist, I would try and hope to talk to you to not be that way. And if you post things that are racist and misogynist, I would hope to get you to a place where you realize that you shouldn't be doing that.
But
I don't think you shouldn't be, removed from society because you feel that
right,
way.
Right, but the way you put it like that, like, I wouldn't want to hire someone in my company who I know is a blatant and outright racist.
No, nor would I, but I mean, obviously I wouldn't want to choose to be around someone like that, but there's got to be a middle ground between being like, okay, they have all the protections in the world versus they have no protections. There's got to be some middle ground. I don't know what that is, and I'm not smart enough to even know what that is. But I do know that while you can't tolerate it, you can't be intolerant of it. To a lawful degree or what have you.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I don't know what the answer to that is.
All right.
But if it's just like, getting drunk on the thing and being sloppy, then
yeah,
I don't know why that's a problem. I mean, everybody does it.
Right.
That's what's so funny about, I feel like, watching a show like this. Oh, is it the last episode? Lloyd Russell is talking about how it's very serious people working at the White House. They don't gloat. And then Josh turns around, is like beating his chest like a gorilla.
Right.
He's like the muffins and the bagels and the glory. And I think that's funny because all of those things have been what was it? The Secret Service guys got arrested like last year or 2 years ago because they had hookers and drugs in Tijuana.
Right.
Very serious people work at the White House. Very serious. I want to go back to something because I don't want to. We just got off of like a nice little track about Tijuana and hookers and Secret Service. That was great. But there was something from the beginning, and it just struck me because there's a lot of other stuff that, I want to get to. I want an answer about this one other thing, because to me, this is one of my favorite things about our dynamic. You are the idealist of the two of us, correct?
I'd agree.
I would agree with that. How do you square the circle? Because we danced around it, but I didn't get an answer from you, and I really do. How do you square the circle of perception versus reality when they are in conflict with one another, which is happening, both in the real world, but in this episode, and from you, for someone that, because I'm certainly more pessimistic, I want to know how, I don't want to say pessimistic actually, but for someone who is not as idealistic as you, I want to know how you handle that. So how do you deal with that? Did I just break you? What happened?
You struck a chord there, Joe.
I struck a chord. Okay. It looks like you're like, it looks like your face is doing the pinwheel that Max do right now.
Oh, that annoying damn pinwheel.
Well, what do you got?
I'm trying to think. What's the best way I can explain this?
Well, do you understand what I'm saying, right?
I think so.
All right.
Maybe you should let me tell a story. All right, so let's talk about a girl, a woman.
Right, a girl. Can't use a real name though.
Can't use a real
name. Did I use Yolanda? I don't remember what I used.
Was it Yolanda?
I think it was Yolanda. It might have been
Debbie.
I don't know. Use something different.
All right. Let's use Melissa.
Melissa. Very good. Melissa. I hate that name.
Well,
I really hate that name.
It's a good name for an ex. All right. So we were dating way back when.
Okay.
And it was a great relationship.
Okay.
Skies were blue.
Ooh. They had blue skies back then?
Blue skies.
Little bluebird on your shoulder. Singing a little ditty. Frolicked in the mist.
Frolicking.
Yes.
I love frolicking.
Frolicking's great. Frolicking like cuddling. Snow. All right. We're going to move on from that. Continue, please.
So we were doing our thing.
Okay.
You know, and everything was good. A relationship was going great.
We're doing our thing. I'm sorry. All right, come on, keep going.
Something brought us apart that was external from the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That really I consider the downfall of the relationship. And it's interesting.
Is it important to know what that is, or it doesn't matter?
I don't really think it matters. Okay. I think it's more relatable if you just think of a relationship that you've had that you were brought apart by something that neither of you had control over.
Okay.
And to me, I was very devastated by this. And I do think that since it was external, none of us caused that to happen. And anytime that something like this happens, you always think to yourself, what could I have done better? Like, you try to perceive yourself in the situation under different circumstances.
Okay.
Like, what could have been different? What could I have done different? How could I have prevented this?
All right.
And you create this false sense of perception about what could have been. So, you know, I'm all depressed and dejected and after the relationship ended because I knew there was nothing I could do about it.
Okay.
And I go to my friends for advice. And one of my really good friends, I don't want to use his name either. Let's use David.
David.
Let's use David.
We'll use David.
So David sat me down.
He sat you.
And he looked at me straight in the face.
David looked at you.
And said...
David said, what did David say?
Sometimes, no matter how you look at the situation, you can't escape the reality of what it is. And for me, it kind of took the onus off of responsibility to say that, you know, it's not your fault, it's not her fault, it's nobody's fault, but this is the reality that was placed before you. And sometimes, no matter how you want to warp the situation in your head, what could have been or what is, you just can't explain, you can't escape the reality of it. And right now, you're in this reality, and this is your reality. So
then how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that on a day-to-day basis?
I think just framing it up like that, first off, framing it up like that, like you can't escape this.
But how do you personally, like, do you think about that while you're going through something? Do you need someone to...
Yes, but I think... Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'll go there. I think that's necessary too. But I think the first step in this is just acceptance. To accept that this is what
acceptance
it is.
Acceptance is the last step.
No, I think that's the first
step. No, it's the last step.
No, it's the first step.
That doesn't make any sense.
To initiate...
Because then there is no other step.
Yeah, but to initiate change, right?
Right, but that's the last step.
I still think it's the first
step. No, it's got to be the last. Because if it's the first step, then there is no second step.
First, you have to accept that there's something going on before you can make a change about it.
All right.
Well, all right? Acceptance. Come on, AA.
No. But
first, you have to admit that you have a problem to fix it.
Right, that's not acceptance.
Then what is acceptance? I don't understand the acceptance.
Well, the first step in having a problem is, yes, admission that there is a problem.
Right.
Right.
And if you want to do something about it, you have to accept that you have a problem.
Right.
And then if you want to do something about it, you can't do anything about your problem unless you accept that you have a problem.
All right. I see. That's a good point, but I don't know that I agree with that.
All right. Well, it's not central to the argument. So.
Oh, that's a good point.
Okay. So.
This is how we get into tangents. All right. Go ahead.
So for me personally, once I've accepted that there's, you know, I recognize that there's something not right here and I need to do something about, something has broken my idealistic views.
Okay.
It takes something external as well, like my friend, almost like to say, to make me make a decision, to make me be okay with something, to make me stand up and take an
action. It's funny because that's actually really... Shit, I'm pissed I asked you that question because you sound smart now. Because it actually gives me a better understanding of this episode now, even a little bit. I mean, people don't exist in a vacuum, you know? It's very easy to say like, oh, why doesn't everybody think the exact same way? Or, you know, how do people get to come to understandings and this and that? This is what's difficult about art because, like, when you're writing characters, it's very easy to just write them... without growth. They either are a thing or not a thing and then become the thing in a split second. And there is no development of the character or of the plot, but of the character and this and that. And what you're describing is really a better understanding of people. I mean, think about it in terms of this episode. I mean, you absolutely can see it with Sam, but let's talk about it in terms of the president. The president is railing against the system here, talking about what is the virtue of a proportional response. And it's, he inevitably has to succumb to the idea that the proportional response is the only response. So what is the character development in that? The development is what you're talking about, which is you continue along this path that you understand as the right way or the only way or whatever it is, as far as you're concerned, until the forces of reality or other people show you that there is no escape and that you have to either accept it, succumb to it, or in, if you can change it or, but the bottom line is there's a relationship between the two and there has to have a change on one side or the other. And in a lot of ways, in a circumstance, I think like in this episode and like the story actually that you just gave, sometimes you just cannot escape reality. I mean, that's what happens to Sam too. I mean, Sam wants to think that, you know, the world can be different and, you know, that you don't have to be held to certain standards, but he knows, and he's railing against CJ.
Right.
And CJ's right. You know, the Joint Chiefs are right. Leo's right. You know, and our characters are fighting against that.
And I think that's interesting too. I think, you know, the whole statement of sometimes no matter how you look at the situation, you can't escape the reality of it, right? That's what we're talking about. And I think that it's one thing to say that, because I feel like this argument could come up again with other people saying, well, my reality is different than your reality.
Right, but that's
but
why...
But I also think that now it's complicated because that's their perception of reality.
Right.
And I think that what I'm talking about is objectivity, right? Objectively, sometimes reality just is reality outside of you and the people involved.
So what you're talking about, the difference between like gravity is immutable and, you know, is that yellow? You know, is that color yellow?
We all see
the colors differently. So yeah, yes, I completely agree. I think it definitely gets more complicated when you're talking about different forms of reality. In terms of, you know, being able to perceive it and what have you. Is that what's happening? That you could argue that's what's happening with CJ and Sam. I guess you could argue that it's happening with both of the, you know, with the president and with Sam.
Even when CJ confronts Sam.
Yeah.
About, you know, Lori.
Yeah.
You know.
The hooker.
But no, let's call her Lori.
Okay, all sorry. Right?
Let's a little respect.
A little right? respect. That's what David also said. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. It's like, you know, Sam's perception of reality
is different than CJ's perception. Actually, I would argue that it's not. And the way that you know that is, again, great writing, is that CJ says it. You knew that there was something to this when, you know, you went to these other guys first and you did it in secret. So you knew that there was something off. So and he knew that there was something off in that
and
reality.
I think that is evidence and data to say that sometimes you can't escape the reality of the situation, right? Because the coming together of those two parties shows that there is something external from these two that causes them to have this conflict and merge.
And it almost seems like like the perception, or not even in this case, I'm not even sure it's even perception, but it's your own ego or wish of an idealistic option or a different option. Think about, like, it almost seems like the president is so broken up about, you know, Morris Tolliver being shot down and these Americans being shot down that he cannot possibly fathom that a proportional response is the correct way to go. You know, he needs to lash out and almost vent in a way to try and say, well, what about this option? What about this option? It's like he has to exhaust himself of all this, and everyone's got to sit there and kind of listen to him and let him go through the motions. Like, even Fitzwalla says, he's doing fine. This is what, you know, like he's in, Leo says he's not doing fine. It's like, well, you know what? Maybe Fitzwalla has seen a first-time president deal with a first-time issue like this and knows that this is really kind of normal. You know what I mean? So maybe it's a lot of that too, that you just have to kind of exhaust this thing before you can let reality set in.
Yeah. It's almost like a minor form of denial. It's like a defense mechanism, right? That we all...
Unless you're correct, and unless you can change reality, you know, effectively. Like, there are people that have seen the world the way it's been and been like, this is not the way the world should be, and they've changed it.
Are you talking about, like, wisdom now?
Well, yeah, wisdom, but I mean also abolitionists during slavery. They were like, this is not right. Right. We need to change this. Like, they didn't say reality can, you know, no, reality is slavery. You know, they did, you know, affect change.
Right.
So now there's a third one. So there's immutable forces, perceptions, and I would say, I don't want to say injustices, because there, you know, there are things that can change that aren't injustices, but ways in which we actually can affect change in the world.
Right. And I think sometimes, like, our moral beliefs get in the way of our ability to see the reality in a situation.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot that gets in the way. Right. Like I was just talking about, I think part of it is like your own id and ego.
Yeah.
There's a lot that can get in the way, but I wanted to bring up one other thing. I don't have a lot left, so I mean, if you have other stuff, please. But one other thing that I wanted to bring up, which I thought was really, really great, very artfully done, was the Morris to glasses to Charlie. So at the end of the episode, the last episode, Morris gets killed, and it starts the trajectory of the frenzy that is Rambo Bartlett.
Yeah.
And from the first scene, he doesn't have his glasses. And the guy that finds his glasses, or figures out where they are, I should say, is Charlie. And that whole wonderful trajectory just kind of tied everything together. Obviously, the metaphor of not having,
like, losing glasses, his head, right? He couldn't see straight the whole episode.
I mean, that's, you know.
That was beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's nicely done. But I like that. I like that it started with Morris and ended with Charlie. It didn't end with Charlie. It really ended with Leo, with that less than stellar turn, in my opinion, at the end.
Right.
But that Charlie figured it out. And that was the moment that Leo decided, because he yells at Charlie. He's like a dick to Charlie. And Leo decides, okay, I'm going to pull you aside because you're just, you know, losing it. I thought that was a really, really nice, just kind of arc of the episode. And I just wanted to point that out for people out there. If they noticed it, if they liked it. No, it was just really well done. I'm sure you know. You did notice it. You noticed the glasses thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But what do you have?
No, that's all I got. That was my last thing was about the glasses.
Yeah. It was such a great part. And I really love that he found it at the end. And this is where Sorkin get a little cheese nuts when he's doing the address then at the end.
Yeah.
And Charlie is like, I've never felt like this before. This is great. He's like, it doesn't go away. It wasn't earned for me. That end wasn't earned for me. And the reason why it wasn't earned is because I didn't buy Leo's argument. I still don't know why Leo got the president on board.
I think it's something internal. It's a post-hoc ergo pop to hoc.
It might be something internal, but because you didn't give me more, I don't know what it is. I'm supposed to assume I know what it is.
Would you say that the president's turn was disproportional
All right, Leo's. That's just stupid. That's
to Leo's.
No, it makes no sense.
Yeah,
it was
disproportional.
It doesn't. It's not disproportional. It comes out of left field. It just. It's not earned. It's not earned. That ending in this. The ending in this episode is not earned to me. And that's the last. That's why I just don't like that. Because there are some episodes where it ends, and I'm like, yeah, wow, oh, and I like really like the end of the first episode of the pilot.
Right.
Totally earned. 100% earned. Everything about that ending was earned. Those people on the rafts, they, you know, they came with their clothes on their backs and they wanted a better life and they wanted it here. Talk about impressive. You earned every single ounce of sappiness and that end. This one, not so much. And to me, it's because I just don't, yeah, I don't buy Jed. My good old buddy Jed's turn. I don't buy it. Oh, and then there's Danny Kincannon. You got anything about...
I don't like him.
Doughy face. Why not?
I don't know. He just seems sleazy to me.
Danny Kincannon?
That's the reporter.
Yeah, he looks like a potato.
Yeah, I don't like him.
Why not?
He's a little sleazy to me.
You say sleazy. I don't know why.
Do you ever just have an instinct about someone?
Yeah, I have one about you right now.
Yeah, well, I have one about Danny Kincannon, or whatever the hell his name is.
No, you got it, Danny Kincannon. Well, it's because I just said it like three times. All
right, yeah.
And Potato Face. And I believe he prefers Potato Face.
All right, we'll call him Potato Face from now on.
All right. Well, maybe your opinion will change of him as the episodes go.
Maybe. I don't even know how I feel about CJ either.
CJ's awesome. Are you kidding me?
I think
me?
She's a phenomenal actress.
But no, I mean the character. You don't like CJ?
I don't say I don't like her. I said I don't know how I feel about her. That's so disproportional to what I just said.
I know,
said.
That is. I was not. I did not proportionate my responses. Is there any character that you hate thus far? We're only into episode three.
Oh, the horrible driver. Who the hell, what's
her
name?
You don't like Mandy?
Mandy?
Mandy, yeah.
I was going to call her Mandamillion.
Mandamillion. No, she's not Maximillion.
Yeah, I don't like Mandy.
All right, so no Mandy. What about who else? Anybody else? Josh? You like Josh?
Josh is all right.
Donna?
Who's Donna?
His secretary.
Oh, I love Donna.
Donna's great,
I love
right?
Donna, yeah.
You guys talking about something? Yeah. Do you want me to get out? Yeah, okay. I love her. Toby, the best character in all of West Wing?
Toby's all right.
Yeah, I bet you think he's all right. do you like my good buddy Jed?
Who's Jed?
The president.
Oh yeah, Jed Bartlett.
Yeah,
Mr. Bartlett, Mr. President. I like him.
And what about Leo?
Leo, I like. I don't know. I feel detached from Leo. I feel like I haven't got to see his emotional side yet.
I think that's going to change pretty soon if I'm not revealing too much. Yeah, I think that's about to change.
Oh, nice.
Right. What about who else do we have? There's one other character. I can't think of who it is.
Well, you're sitting across from him.
Oh, that's right. Samuel J. Seaborn. Actually, it's Samuel S. Seaborn. No, Samuel Norman Seaborn.
Why don't you just get his name right?
Norman's his middle name. I had to remember it. I didn't remember. It's Norman.
All right. Well, you know
Sammy Norms.
Know how I feel about him.
Yeah, I know. All right. Let's wrap this baby up. We'll be back with episode, what was this, three? Four.
This was three.
So four is next. I think that's five votes down. This is a good one. You know what I liked about this episode in the last? It almost felt like a two-parter. You know, it wasn't, but it was. It was like a little journey that we just took.
Yeah, it was.
It
was definitely different than the pilot.
I don't remember. Yeah, well, that's
like these
sure.
two, they felt more connected than the pilot. Seemed a little disjointed.
I wonder. I can't remember if they do more stuff like that, where it's like, you know, something happens in one episode and then they follow it through on the second. I think they do that with Lord John Marbury. I can't wait for you to meet Lord John Marbury. He's great.
Sounds like a fun guy.
He is a fun guy. God, this show's so good. I'm so excited to watch. Let's go watch the next episode right now.
All right, let's do it.
Guys, we're going to go watch the next episode, and then maybe we'll record tonight. I don't know. It's pretty late. But all right, we're going to be back with the next episode, episode four. This was episode three of Proportional Response. Thank you very much, guys. Joseph Amato saying goodbye.
Bye! That was a disproportional response to your... Bye, guys.